A small earthquake hit the PGA Tour locker room this morning. A memo to players outlines future eligibility, and that means fewer exempt players, smaller fields, and guys having a tougher time earning and keeping a PGA Tour card. We'll have all the details. And speaking of keeping cards, one of the most popular feel-good stories on the PGA Tour champions in recent years has been the teaching pro who won Q School. Rob Libritz has lived his dream for the last three seasons, but is fighting to find status for 2025. He joins us to talk about how he's trying to keep the dream alive. Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today.
Welcome in to Golf Today. I'm Eamon Lynch, joined today by Golf Channel senior writer Rex Hoggard, and we have a lot to talk about. Some significant changes are coming to the PGA Tour for its players. Let's take a look at the particulars. Here is what you need to know. The PGA Tour is poised to cut the number of fully exempt players by roughly 20% beginning in 2026. According to a 17-page memo that was sent to the membership today, the proposed changes are part of an ongoing review by the Tour's Player Advisory Council. And here is a summary of the top line points. They will adjust the maximum number of players in open tournaments from 156 down to 144, with further reductions possible to 120 or 132. There will only be 100 fully exempt players in the FedEx Cup as opposed to the current 125. They will decrease the number of cards from graduates of the Korn Ferry Tour from 30 to 20 and reduce or eliminate the famous Monday qualifiers, which give four spots into tour events every week. PGA Tour Policy Board going to vote on this on November 18th. So, Rex, there's a lot to digest in this. What is your initial sense of what the reaction is going to be in the locker room? Because it's very easy to say that this is just, you know, a sop to the top players, again, that it's protecting the top guys. But some things are actually necessary to improve this product, right?
And I think this goes back to earlier in the summer, Eamon. And you and I have spent a lot of time talking about this as the news has come out a little trickly, but we've learned a little bit more. And this comes down to, in the memo you referenced, they reference ideal field sizes. And the idea here is that they want to present the best possible product, not just for TV, not just for the fans, but also for the membership. And they start talking about how many times this year has the Friday round not made the cut because they had to finish on Saturday. I think that number is 28 times, 28 events this year have had at least one round that did not finish as scheduled. And it has everything to do with field sizes, pace of play, and the amount of daylight. Now, some of those things the PGA Tour can control, and some of them it cannot, like the amount of daylight. However, as you pointed out, reducing field sizes seem to be what is sort of the pointing end of the spear here. And as a result, you're going to end up with fewer and fewer tour cards.
It does seem to be the end of the mantra that the Tour existed on for a long time. In fact, it's the mantra that it bonused its executives on for years, which is this concept of creating playing opportunities, which is why the fields are so big. It's why there are so many opposite field events as well. Are we now moving into a different era in this era of private equity and professional golf where it suddenly earn your opportunities?
I think that's 100% fair. And there was part of me that was a little fearful today about coming on reporting this story, because I can only imagine what it would sound like if Trip Eisenhower was on the other side of the camera for me right now, because he and I have pretty much spent our careers covering this subject. And if you'd have gone back just maybe 5 years ago, the idea of cutting playing privileges or cutting playing opportunities by 20 by 25% would have caused, you said, a little earthquake. It would have caused a seismic earthquake. It would have been something that the players would have never stood for. But now you look at where we are in this point in time. You have a rival league that came up. You have private equity, which has stepped in with the PGA Tour. You have ongoing negotiations between the Tour and the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. And you have a very distinct leaning towards the top players in the game. And that's where we are. It's less about the guys at the bottom of the FedEx Cup money list, the points list, than it is about the guys at the top. And it's also about making the best possible product. I spoke with one member of the Player Advisory Council this morning about it. And the idea was, if this Tour wants to do more storytelling, and specifically on Friday, about the guys trying to make the cut and all the different stories and tales behind that, there's no way they can really do that if the cut's not being made till Saturday. You're also talking about players having to tee off 5 minutes after the sun came up. You're talking about players having to finish up in the dark. All of these things factored into this decision, and ultimately the policy board will decide. And it seems to me if they're trending towards agreeing with these proposed changes.
Rex, you spent And anyone who spends a lot of time around this tour realises that all of the policies and protocols that go into deciding who's playing and what their priority ranking is, it's a Byzantine system that you kind of need a PhD in physics to actually figure out. There's a lot of those details in this memo that's gone out today, 17 pages of it. You've been digesting it all morning. Is there anything else that caught your eye other than what we've just summarised as the top line takeaways?
Well, I think we're going to talk a little bit more, really, about the decisions that they came to as far as field sizes. And again, that has to do with available daylight, and we can have a long conversation about pace of play. I think there was one interesting thing that came up. I was talking with a member of the pack that as this discussion unfolded, there was the idea that the players were going to be okay with reduced field sizes at full field events if there was a trade-off, if the tour would have added to the number of players in the signature events, which right now have a minimum field size of 72 players. That seems to me as if it was a non-starter. When you read through that memo, I think the line was the tour was concerned that it would cause confusion among the fans if you started adjusting field size in the signature events, at least going into the next year. This could all change, of course, and the earliest that these changes could happen, it needs to be pointed out, is 2026. But you're right. I think that's the interesting part of this, is that they've essentially taken these priority rankings, which are very complicated and understood only by a very few people, and they've really simplified it. You finish in the top 100 on the previous season's FedEx Cup points list. You finish in the top 20 in the Korn Ferry Tour, the top 10 on the DP World Tour, and that's essentially your tour going forward from there.
We're going to bring in another voice now, our Golf Channel colleague, Ryan Lavner. Ryan, you've been a long-time advocate on this show of making the PGA Tour much more cutthroat. Do you see enough in this to lead you in that direction, that the tour is actually getting more competitive and less paternalistic?
Yeah, I certainly do. I mean, this is, what, 23-page document, and shockingly, I agree with a majority of these proposals. It is more competitive. It is more cutthroat. There is less bloat. I think it is less unwieldy with so many cards that are going to be up sort of at stake each and every year on the PGA Tour. I understand that this has been in the works for months, if not years, and it's very hard to tell players at the pinnacle of their profession, essentially, that they're not quite good enough. But if those players remove themselves from the situation and look at it objectively, a whittling down of fully exempt members on the PGA Tour was necessary for the overall strength and I think the watchability of the PGA Tour product. And obviously not every player who is a PGA Tour member is going to agree with this. But this was discussed by the PAC, and the PAC consists of players who range from future Hall of Famer Justin Thomas to 40-something journeyman Josh Teeter. They all understand the ramifications, and it still looks like this is going to be rubber stamped. So I think that's a positive move for the PGA Tour.
Lab, no one covers the PGA Tour university rankings better than you, looking at the young players coming out of college, making that move directly to the PGA Tour. As an unintended consequence, could these changes impact how a young player, a talented player, who should be on the PGA Tour, can make their way to the highest level?
I think you could make that argument. When you first look at the Korn Ferry Tour, was the first thing that came to mind, because that's where a lot of the players in the PGA Tour university rankings are going to be funneled. And dropping those number of exempt spots from 30 to 20 each and every year from the Korn Ferry Tour certainly looks eye-opening on the surface. However, I actually think that those players now have a better shot at keeping their cards, because there are going to be fewer exempt members. There are going to be smaller field sizes. They are going to have more starts, as opposed to sort of getting in that condensed crunch in late winter, early spring, when so many players are eager to start their FedEx Cup seasons off on a strong note. I think the players who are at least funneled through the Korn Ferry Tour now have more chance of staying power, which I think is a net positive.
Ryan, in this metric that they're using now to decide why the field sizes are reduced, they cite a number of factors, including the number of courses a tournament may be played on, but daylight is also one of those factors. Would they need to do that if they actually had a grown-up pace of play policy that they actually enforced, or are they just going to keep playing around the edges of it? Because they do get into that in this memo, but it doesn't seem particularly stringent. Or does a smaller field actually greater expose the slow pokes out there? Because it's hard to get out of position when there's 150 guys. There's nowhere to go. You can't really fall too far back. That's maybe not so true when there's 120 guys and suddenly you're falling a hole and a half behind.
Yeah, I think it's a multifaceted issue, Eamon. And keep in mind, like 120, 132, 144 players in a field is still a massive feel for the PGA Tour. It allows playing opportunities, but it also kind of creates the dynamic and the environment that you can have some diversity week to week on the PGA Tour, and you can sort of foster an environment in which the next generation of stars can grow, and that is obviously the desire for the PGA Tour. The pace of play policy that was mentioned does seem curious, because they're essentially giving more time and lessening the fines for players who are offending the stroke play policy. I guess you could make the argument that it would then embolden the rules officials on the PGA Tour if the penalties in terms of fines are lessened. But we've had, what, two stroke play policies in the last 30 years on the PGA Tour. It's important to keep in mind that this is, for all intents and purposes, a TV show. And as long as it finishes on time, usually 6 p.m. Eastern time on the East Coast, it's going to be fine. I think, yeah, to your point, if everyone just played faster, maybe this is not as much of an issue. But I don't think lopping the field size by 12 players is that huge of a negative for the PGA Tour in this instance.
There is one aspect of this, guys, that I do think is actually pretty short-sighted on the tour. On the whole, I think it's a very positive move to make it more competitive, but reducing or potentially eliminating almost all of the Monday qualifier tournaments to me seems a little bit short-sighted. We don't obviously get many winners out of the four guys who qualify on Mondays, but they are a great source. It's kind of a Hunger Games. It's a source of great narrative week in, week out on the tour. It's really the ultimate meritocracy out there. I would argue they should expand it and stream the coverage of that. Are you in favour of this idea of just sort of diminishing the narrowing of pathways to include the Monday queues?
Look, it pains me to say, because I love telling these stories, and I've told these stories for the majority of my career, but I think you can lump sort of the Q school players and the Monday qualifiers in a similar category here. You're still going to have five players who get through the Q school at the end of the year. That still seems like too many. You look at sort of the retention rate for that. Only one player this season in Hayden Springer is even remotely close to keeping his tour card for 2025. A Monday qualifier reduction is probably similar. The tour cited statistics that 65 to 70% of those players don't even make the cut on a weekly basis. And so the PGA Tour, if you're looking at it sort of 30,000 feet, they're looking to identify stars, not necessarily one-week stories that don't have a huge shelf life. And so I can understand where they're going, even if some of the romanticism of a guy who gets hot and has the week of his life is going to be reduced moving forward.
You never were much of a romantic, Ryan. Certainly a lot to digest for tour members today. Some of it going to be pretty tough to swallow. Thanks for the analysis, Ryan.
Thanks, guys.
Well, keeping status on any professional tour doesn't get easier with age. Just ask Rob Labritz, the teaching pro who made the Champions Tour struggling to earn his spot for 2025. He's going to join us next.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
We're continuing on golf today, and it was a big Sunday for Padraig Harrington at the second leg of the Charles Schwab Cup playoffs. The World Golf Hall of Famer came out on top of the Simmons Bank Championship at the final round of 67, his ninth victory on the PGA Tour Champions, and that moved him to fourth in the Charles Schwab Cup standings. Well, the PGA Tour Champions season wraps up next week with the Charles Schwab Cup Championship at Phoenix Country Club being played there for the eighth straight year. 72 holes as opposed to the normal 54. The top 36 in the standings are eligible, and Stephen Alker is the defending champion. Rob Labritz was the medalist at Q School for the Champions Tour back in 2021 and became one of the popular stories out there over the last three seasons. But earlier this month at the SAS Championship, he fell agonizingly short of making the playoffs and securing his status for 2025. He talked honestly about that disappointment.
Rob, I know it's not the outcome you wanted. How bad does this hurt?
You tell me. I got nothing to say. Yeah, played my ass off this year and played really crappy, and just had to miss an event due to my back injury, and there it is. I mean, you cannot come out here and expect to play well injured. And you have to come out here, and you got to be firing on all cylinders, because you're going to get swallowed alive. And unfortunately, I got swallowed alive.
What's next?
I don't know. I'll figure it out. Q school, maybe. I don't know. I got a lot of thinking to do, and my game's getting better, unfortunately. But it's not. I don't know. I don't know what to say.
Can you take anything away from this?
Yeah, I mean, I spent 3 years out here with, some of the top players on the planet. Got to know everybody. My game got better. My short game got better. Putting has always let me down. I've made some friends and learned a lot, had a good 3-year run. What are you going to say, I'm a club pro.
No. Go ahead, Vince.
Rob, given your journey to get here, how difficult is it to stand here now knowing where you are at the finish?
Knowing that I don't have any more things to play in? It's very difficult. Very difficult, yeah. I worked my ass off out here. That's all I can say. I worked my ass off. I can't look back and say, I wish I did this, I wish I did that. I worked my ass off and I played through the crappiest year that I've had out here. And it just hurts right now. I need some time to just figure it out.
Rob Liberts joins us now. Rob, that's a pretty tough watch at a pretty low raw moment in your career. You've had a couple of weeks to digest that disappointment. Is it any less painful now?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you got me walking off 18. And I truly didn't know where I stood. I didn't know what number I was. I knew I fell short of the playoffs. I couldn't have told you if I was 78, 80th. I just knew that I lost status. And I knew that I worked 18 years to get status. And I just know how hard it is. And in that moment, it just kind of hit me how hard it is to get back there. It was an emotional interview. I've reflected. In the past 30 some odd years, 35 years, I've been in the golf industry. I've always progressed in my journey. Assistant golf pro, head golf pro, director of golf, tour player. I've always strived to be better and be the best. Last year, I fell out of balance with myself. I played 26 events 3 years in a row. That was a lot for me. I was pretty much toast. I was talking negatively to myself on the golf course. I was in a bad place last year, which is a shame because I played so well the year prior. It just comes from learning. It comes from, I was a 3-year rookie. I'm 53 years old, but I'm a 3-year rookie out on tour. So, I've got to learn how to handle my emotions and just get through these things.
Rob, you touched on this in the interview from Cary, North Carolina, the injuries you had to deal with this season. How difficult is it to play on that tour with injuries?
Well, I mean, for me, it was very difficult. You see other guys like Jerry Kelly, who's got rheumatoid arthritis and he just won. So, I came out this season, January 16th, I woke up and I had an L4, L5 herniation. I don't know. It was out of nowhere. I couldn't move. I spent 3 weeks on my back, spinal epidural. So I had to withdraw from Arizona. So I started off the season not even knowing if I was going to play a full season or if I should have taken a major medical. Hindsight, I probably should have taken a major medical. I wouldn't have played at all this season, but I would have got myself, status for next season. 2025, but those are the things that you try to do. You live and learn, and you run with it. You try to figure it out as you go. I talked to a lot of my compadres out there, and they all gave me great advice. All the tour players out there gave me great advice. They said, you can't come out here and play injured, because you're playing against Padraig Harrington, Stephen Elker, and all these unbelievable guys who are shooting 20 under every week. Steve Stricker, you can't go out there feeling wounded, that's for sure. Or at least I can't go out there feeling wounded.
How important is it for you to hit a reset button here, Rob? Because you could drive yourself crazy just going back through the season and a shot here and a shot there that made the difference in terms of keeping that status.
Yeah, you can do that. I've looked at my stats, Eamon. I know where I'm deficient. I was deficient in my short game. My short game got better. I was deficient in putting. I need to feel good over putting. When I got through Q school, I was putting great. When I first started my career out in the PGA Tour Champions, I was feeling great. And, you know, my stats are my stats. That was the stat that I needed the most improvement on, and I worked the hardest on, but unfortunately just didn't pan out during the season. So, yeah, I mean, I'm still driven to win out there. I've just got to get back there.
Rob, when you look at the emotions that you showed in Cary just a few weeks ago, and you talked about how difficult this season was, but can you walk through some of the highlights of your time? You said you spent 3 years on the PGA Tour Champions and had some success.
Oh, you know, yeah, I finished back-to-back fourths in the U.S. Senior Open. You know, I had a fourth in the Hogue Classic, playing with Steve Stricker over the weekend on Saturday and Sunday. You know, I've played with all the greats out there, all the guys that I used to watch, you know, growing up, from the Chris DeMarcos to the Ernie Els to the, you know, to the Bernhard Langers. I mean, I look at my journey as, you know, 35 years in the club pro business and then 3 years on tour. I almost feel like I have a PhD in golf now. So going from what I used to do to, you know, playing at the highest level, what else can we obtain in my career? I'd love to get back out there and play more events like Jason Kerin. Jason Kerin, my hat's off to him. A buddy of mine, just he kicked some serious tail this year. It's great to see him as a club pro get out there and get status for next year. I would love to do that, and I would love to pick and choose some of the events that I could play in. I would love to not play a full schedule. I'd love to play 20 events if I could. If my game was sharp enough to keep my card at 20 events or 18 events, that would be awesome for me. I know traveling 26 weeks a year was really hard when I have a young family. You know, it's what you do to make ends meet and you know, put your lifestyle forward. So the reflecting over the past 10 days has been a lot. We've reflected a lot. And I know that everybody out there from the support I've gotten through my family, obviously, and my coach and family and all my social media has been amazing. The tour players, they're like, Rob, you know, dust yourself off, get yourself back out here, go to Q school, get your card back, and then figure it out. And that's the main focus right now.
Is that the decision you've made, Rob, is you're going to Q school? That's your best means rather than, say, relying on writing letters to tournament organizers next year, hoping for starts, that you're going to try to earn that full status back?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've got to try to earn full status back, you know, by going through Q school. If I can do that, then I won't have to write the sponsors invite letters. I hope I've garnered enough, you know, friendships and done enough for the tournament administrators and the tournaments that I will get a few starts. Obviously, I'm not expecting the world. You know, I'm not a huge name. I'm just, you know, a guy trying to make a living. So, but I love the game of golf, and I love being out there with the pro-ams and playing the tournaments. So it's, yeah, I'm going to definitely go back to Q school. And Eamon, we're going to figure out where the path leads me from there. Like I said, I've got 35 years of experience in the golf industry. So if I needed to go another route, I could always do so.
Rob, what was the conversation like to come to this conclusion that you wanted to give it another shot, that you were going back to Q school? And how close, if at all, did you get to just walking away?
You know, at that moment, Rex, I was... You know, you guys, Al caught me in one of my weakest moments, or vulnerable moments. Not weak by any means; it's vulnerable. I mean, I was walking off. I was extremely, all the moments of that whole year just kind of hit me at one time. And you know, I'm an emotional guy. You know, when that happens, you realize I've never lost my job before. So, you know, understanding that you don't have a job, you know, the next year, you kind of like, okay, well, let's see. We've got to, you know, pay some bills and stuff. So, you know. I was disappointed during that interview, and I was speaking emotionally. I want to play golf, but I also like to have a nice home base and you know, do some other things. That, you know, balance in my life is key. And as a PGA club professional for such a long time, I had a nice balance of playing, teaching, running, hiring, developing, building. And you know, when I got out on tour, you know, the first year is kind of like a, wow, here I am. Here I'm playing, you know, against all the greatest. And, you know, your second year, I didn't make that top 36. Let's get in that top 36. And then to be honest, when I woke up this third year, I was excited, but it wasn't the same excitement that I felt the first 2 years, because I knew how, I can't say lonely it is out on tour for the most part, but it's, you know, it's, you're out there alone. You're doing your thing. It's all about you and golf. And, you know, I've always been around people. I've always been around members. I've always been around, you know, family. So when you get out there and you're alone, it's just a different lifestyle you got to get used to, and you got to see if it's for you.
If it turns out that you don't have full status next year, Rob, can you walk away from the PGA Tour Champions content with what you've accomplished in the 3 years you've been out there?
No, Eamon, to be honest with you, I always wanted to win. And it doesn't mean that I'm hanging up my clubs by any means. If I don't get through Q school, I can qualify for senior opens. I can get in senior PGAs. I can try to Monday qualify. You know, there's all sorts of different ways that I can still garner status out there. And one of the things I did learn out there is every week is a new lottery ticket. All you got to do is play good for those three or four rounds and you win. And, you know, your life changes again, just like my life changed when I won Q school. So, if I keep my talent and my golf game at the forefront, which is what I've always done throughout my entire career, doors have always opened. So that's what I plan on continuing to do. And I've made a ton of relationships out there in the past 3 years. And, I'm excited to see where this golf journey is going to take me. I don't feel like it's an end of the road by any means. I feel like, if anything, I've learned more and become a better golf professional and PGA professional and professional golfer just for the past 3 years of being out on tour. So I'm always trying to look at the positives and take away and trying to build and not go backwards. So,
well, any event would benefit from having someone with your perspective and gratitude for this journey out there. We hope we see a lot of you in 2025. Rob, thanks for spending some time with us.
I appreciate you guys having me on, and I'm a big fan of the show, so keep it coming.
One of the good guys. It's semifinals day down at Eastlake in Atlanta. Some of the best college teams in the land going head-to-head. Live action's coming your way at the top of the hour, but we're going to get an update from Eastlake on the other side of this break.